Let's begin. We'll start on our next lecture, and this lecture will be on teenagers. We're on schedule to end at 4 o'clock, and that is exactly what we're going to do. It is now about 2:15, so we will move along and deal with that. I trust you all had a good lunch. Okay, great. Okay, let's turn in our Bibles to Ephesians 4. This is where we all began. Ephesians 6, 1 through 4. Ephesians 6, 1 through 4. This is where we began, and we will be closing out on this also. Ephesians 6, 1 through 4. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment with a promise, that it may be well with you, and you may live long on the earth. Now, can we all agree that we will always be our parents' sons and daughters, but we will not always be a child? Can we agree on that? In the light of that, can we agree that in parenting, our child will grow through a transition where the child will cease to be a child and will move into the position of being a son or a daughter? This will not be a black and white transition occurrence, but it will be a transition. Some of these transitional periods are determined by culture and economy. Some of these transition periods are determined by God and His creation of our bodies. So, for instance, puberty. You may say your child is not ready to enter puberty. Will that change anything?
No,
it won't change a thing. So you've either prepared him or her for that, or you have not. Now, in a minute, I'm going to ask Eleanor to come up and share what she did with our daughters in terms of them entering puberty. And I will share with you what I did with my sons. That will be because we're talking about teenagers. And some is cultural. If our culture announces that teenagers are not children, but they're teenagers, there's nothing we can do about that, can I? I was the education pastor of a church, and I was suggesting that we include 7th and 8th graders in the youth program rather than with the elementary school children. And a lot of the parents were saying that they are too young to do that. I pointed out to them that the public school system had already decided that for us. For 5 days out of the week, 7 through 12 were together. It had already happened. But there was this concept in their brains that the children were too young, so irrespective of the reality of the culture they were living in, they were still functioning as if it wasn't so. Does that make sense? And so what we have to understand is there are some things about our children growing up that just are. And not wanting it to be that way, and not wanting to think about it, and particularly not wanting to think that we are that old, won't change anything. So, one of the things that adults of teenagers have to do is age gracefully. You can't be a 20-year-old, 20-something father of preschoolers and elementary schoolers forever. You become 30 and then you become 40. You become 50 and you have to change with your teens. That is important. And some of the problems that parents have in raising teenagers is not only are their teenagers not aging gracefully, but the parents are not aging gracefully. One of the verses that's in my prayer notebook is, grandchildren are the crown of old men, but the glory of sons is their fathers. Well, having 9 grandchildren is kind of a nice deal, because I go into a church or a Sunday school class and conference, and I say, yes, I have 4 children and 9 grandchildren. All of a sudden, people are clapping and patting me on the back and telling me what a great guy I am. And what did I do? My daughters and daughters-in-law did all the work. I'm the beneficiary, aren't I? Without doing anything. Well, that's a great blessing my children have bestowed upon me, and I appreciate that. And they, my children, are raising our grandchildren to love and respect their grandma and grandpa, and they are very well behaved, and they kiss us and love us. And I know those are gifts that my children give me, that my grandchildren would be a crown, that they would be well behaved. In fact, my son and son-in-law and daughter and daughter-in-law all use the Family Discipleship Seminar, and they use it in their home. And in fact, they have sponsored us teaching it. In fact, my son not only sponsored it at his church, but he teaches it also. And we have wonderful, well-behaved grandchildren that are honoring to us. And that's a lot of fun. But what's the second half of that verse? The glory of sons is their fathers. So what's my responsibility? What's my gift I give to my son? What is that? To finish my life in dignity and in walking with God. To be faithful to his mother and to be a good husband to his mother. To have a home that the grandchildren can play in safely. To dress and act appropriately to my age. That's very important. When I'm around Sam and his friends, I don't try to be one of the guys. I'm not. Now, I love Sam. Sam calls me his best friend, and I appreciate that. But I know there's an age difference. And that's a term of endearment, and I appreciate that. But I know that when I'm around his friends, it would just be embarrassing for him, for me to try to be one of the guys, wouldn't it? And that's in my appearance. I spoke at a college conference. When I speak, I generally wear a coat and tie. We have a GCI ministry shirt with an emblem on it. So when we speak, when I'm wearing the GCI ministry shirt, I will sometimes wear an open collar tie or not a coat, but it's still an open collar sports coat or not a sports coat, but it's still a formal attire. Dress slacks, polished shoes, the GCI shirt, or a coat and tie. And then how do the college students dress? Shorts, flip-flops, blue jeans, t-shirts. Well, I was speaking at a college conference, and a college minister, not much older than me, asked me what I was trying to prove by how I was dressing. I'm not trying to prove anything, but, I'm old enough to be some of these kids' grandfathers. So. But you know what I thought? I looked at him. Here's a man about 45 years old, with wrinkled blue jeans and a t-shirt, kind of long hair, tennis shoes, dressed like a college student. I thought, well, what are you? I didn't say it. I thought, what are you trying to prove? Well, I'm not trying to prove anything. I think you're trying to prove you're not 45. So one of the things we want to do is age gracefully and not be an embarrassment to our teenagers. They should not be embarrassed of us. We should not be embarrassed of them. Together, we should age gracefully. And that's very important. That's very important. So there's an expectation of how parents of children and how grandparents should present themselves in public, and we should do that, irrespective of what ministry we're involved in. And that's very important. And we should behave appropriately when we host teenagers in our home. We shouldn't make fun of them, but we shouldn't try to be one of them. It's very important. So, teens. First, we'll talk about disciplining teens. Disciplining teens. Now, we are not going to use the rod when we discipline teens. We've talked about that before. I don't want to belabor the subject, but since this might be listened to as a standalone talk, we should revisit this. So let's turn to Proverbs 27, 22. Proverbs 27, 22. Proverbs 27, 22. Though you pound a fool in a mortar with pestle, along with crushed grain, yet his foolishness will not depart from him. So there is a time at which the rod is no longer functional. Now we do know in Proverbs 23, 13, 14 that the rod is a tool of grace. It eliminates foolishness. It delivers the soul from Sheol. So why does the rod work for children and not for adolescents and adults? Why? I don't know. The Bible says so. Why does the rod work for children, but if you strike your wife, it's such a heinous sin that God won't even listen to your prayers anymore? I don't know why. The Bible says so. Why will the rod work for children, but if you have prisoners and beat them as a part of corporal punishment, that will have no value at all. In fact, it will be detrimental. I don't know. The Bible just says so. So we accept that as a fact. We accept that as a fact. And anybody who teaches that a wife needs a good spanking every once in a while is a liar, is a false prophet, and is in sin. Because the Bible doesn't teach that. It teaches just the opposite. It teaches just the opposite. And I know many people who've ruined their relationship with their teenagers by not making this transition and insisting on spanking teenagers, and as a result, humiliating the teenager and creating bitterness between them. The Bible says that we are not to provoke our children to anger. There are a number of ways we can provoke them to anger. One is by negligence. My dad was never around. My mom was never around. They just, as soon as they could get me out of the home and away to boarding school, or, you know, I would come home to an empty house. And so they grew up bitter. But another way is abuse. My parents treated me like I was 5 years old when I was 15 years old. Still spanking me with the rod. Well, that will create anger too. It doesn't say our children will never get angry with us, because if it says that, then our job is to keep them happy, and that's not our job. But that word provoke means to do things either purposefully or out of sinful actions that creates anger in our children's hearts, and we're not supposed to do that. So, when do we stop spanking our children? One is age 12, because at age 13 they're teenagers. The other is puberty. Can we all agree that once a young lady has entered puberty, it is inappropriate for us to be spanking her on her bottom or doing anything near her bottom. That's inappropriate. And once a young man has entered puberty, it's inappropriate for a mother to be pulling down his pants and spanking him on the bottom or doing anything. It's also inappropriate for anybody to be sleeping in that child's bed except that child. It's inappropriate for anybody to be bathing that child or be in a bathtub with that child except that child. Then it is just inappropriate. So we set up boundaries to protect our children in these areas. So, having said that, how do we discipline our children? How do we cope with their transition to adulthood? Well, as my son Sam entered puberty, and then Ellen is going to share about the girls, I would sit down and talk with my son about the changes in his body, about the temptations that were coming ahead of him, and about sexual reproduction, so that he would be aware of what happens. Man, the father needs to talk to his son about this, because the sexuality of men is night and day different from the sexuality of women. And in my marriage seminar, when I talk about sexual intimacy and excitement in marriage, one of the things I do is I go through the five ways men are different than women. And most women just sit there with their mouths open because they didn't realize how different their husbands were. It never occurred to them. But they are. So we have to approach puberty with our sons very differently than puberty with our daughters. So I would talk about my son with that. And one of the things that we would end up with was me sharing with him that if he chooses to be sexually promiscuous in the 21st century, he will die. Can we all agree on that? He will die prematurely. And a very painful death from HIV. First, he will contract any number of debilitating sexually transmittable diseases that are not fatal, and then finally at one point he'll contract HIV. It will develop into full blown AIDS and he'll die a terrible death. It's incurable. So we have to talk to him about that, and I'll tell him that he will be told that condoms are a safe way to protect him, and I'll tell him that that's a lie, that one out of six condoms fail. And those are quality condoms. Who knows what the junk from China and Russia and places like that are like? Huh? You know, one out of six condoms fail, resulting in a pregnancy. Did you know that a hole that a spermatozoa can wiggle through is like a giant 70-lane freeway for a virus, isn't it? It's like a giant bay. it is wider than like the Zambezi River, isn't it? A virus, you cannot give any high school microscope, you can see a spermatozoa with, can't you? You need an electron microscope to see a virus. So a little hole that might let just a handful of spermatozoa through in order to impregnate a woman because her condom failed will let millions and millions of viruses come pouring through there, won't it? So you just take a gun and you put one bullet in it and leave the other five chambers empty, and you spin it and you pull the trigger. And then you spin it again and pull the trigger, and sooner or later it's going to go off, isn't it? And you get a big packet of condoms that you buy at the wonderful medical store. You know the great medical stores they buy these at? Like filling stations. They have filling stations. They have wonderful venting systems, you know, at the back of the filling stations. In the back there are men in lab coats, and they're testing these condoms to make sure they're good, aren't they? Well, it's just a high-tech scientific environment, filling stations, aren't they? Or grocery stores. That's another wonderful scientific medical center. And so you buy a bunch of those, and you just wait around for the sexually transmitted disease of the day to go to you. Now, I happen to know this because we got pregnant with four children using condoms and phone together. So, you know, it was just a matter of time. If I relied on condoms right now, I would have approximately 39 years, 18 children at least. So, condoms are not going to protect your sons, and I sit down and I use multiple illustrations to it. I had a little toy gun I showed him. I had a bowl with six marbles in it and one black marble, and I had him reach in and take one out, reach in and take one out, reach in. And it's just a matter of time. It is just a matter of time. So it's very important to cover that with our children. I'm going to let Eleanor come up and share how she talked with our daughters about that.
Well, we have three daughters who are very different personalities. I knew the most important thing was to talk with them early, because I didn't want them to hear about becoming a woman from anyone but me initially. I didn't want them to hear about it from their friends or in any other situation. I wanted to be the one who created the environment so that they had the framework for understanding what was going to happen in their lives from a biblical perspective and from a loving perspective. So with our first daughter, I explained to her what the process that would be going on with her body and what it was like to be a married woman, and talked about everything. And her response was to stop me in the middle and say, "Okay, Mom, I don't want to hear any more about it. Thank you. That's fine. I understand. That's fine." But I told her, I said, "Well, you know, this is great, and you may want to talk about this later, and I'm always available. We can always talk about it." And that's what has happened over the years. She would ask me a question, "What about this?" And some of them were very specific questions. And I just, with a very calm heart and straight face, would just explain it to her as clearly as I could. And that was a real good kind of dialoguing environment. Our second daughter is more of an artist. And when I explained to her from Genesis on how God brought man and woman together in the process of becoming a woman, she started crying and said, "Oh, that is so beautiful. Oh, I'm so glad. Very different, you know." And again, we continued the dialogue. And for each of these, we also went to a special place. We went to a little tea shop because I wanted it to be an event that they remembered, not just something we kind of did off to the side, but a specific time together. So that was the second daughter. Our third daughter is a scientist. So I knew I needed to be prepared. So I got out the book and looked at diagrams and understood exactly how everything worked. And sure enough, when I started talking to her, she said, "That's great. Now how does this work? And how does this work? And what happens here?" So I got a napkin and I drew a diagram of female anatomy and, you know, how everything works. And she was very happy to have all the specifics about it. And when we were finished, I looked over and there was an older couple sitting at the table next to us, just about to fall out of their chairs because they were leaning over to hear. So I guess it was interesting. But the point is that you want to, don't wait, because your daughters will hear from other people. And you want to be the first one in there. The girls will still talk about everything, but you want to be the one in there with the facts, so they're not hearing things that are not true, that are just rumors passed around. And you want to be the one to give it the framework that this is the way God made you. You know, this is a part of His plan for your life. You know, it is a wonderful thing to be married and to experience married love. This is something very precious, and that you stay for one man. All of that, you want to be the one to give them that. So it may be that you need to speak to your daughters when they are 9 or 10 years old and open up a dialogue, and then continue when they're, for sure, before they are 12. Because you want to be the one to talk to them first.
Thank you, dear.
That's excellent.
Now, we have these teenagers, and we cannot spank them. They have entered puberty, and we've helped them with this transition, and they're not children anymore. Well, they're my children, and I get to spank them. Fine. You can allow your father to come over into your house and spank you? No? Well, then it needs to change, doesn't it? It also needs to change because even if you have the right to spank them, you have to have an exit strategy, don't you? So we are in our exit strategy, we are transitioning from obey to honor, aren't we? Because we want our children to learn to function independently from us. Spiritually, don't we? To go off, get married, get a job, join a church, and raise a Christian family apart from us. And, you know, and these things have, this sword cuts both ways. You leave your father and mother, cleave to your wife, and create a new family. But your children are all going to do the same. And ladies, your daughters are going to change their names. So we need to be on each other's side. If you have made the foolish decision to side with your children and play favorites, well, the Bible, what do you have? We have all of Genesis, story after story, and then Samuel and 2 Samuel, story after historical revelation after example from God the Father telling us, don't do this. Don't take sides with your children. Don't play favorites. They're all going to leave. You want them to leave. And when they leave, you want there to be a good marriage. So how are we going to discipline them? Well, the first thing is, in all discipline, what is the goal? Their success. So we're not simply going to use punitive discipline. Cooperation is the golden rule at William Diamond Junior High. Why do I know that? Because I had a mathematics teacher at William Diamond Junior High. He was a Catholic immigrant, still spoke with a thick Catholic brogue. And if during his math class you looked at the clock, he would give you a legal piece of paper like this, narrow line, and you would have to print one per line. Cooperation is the golden rule at William Diamond Junior High. Both sides. And turn it in the next day. So I got caught a number of times looking at the clock. I did that. That did me absolutely no good, did it? It didn't help things to go well with me. It didn't help things to live long. I simply have that phrase now at the age of 62 burned into my brain. So we're not going to use things like that. What we want to do is think creatively for their well-being. So Eleanor and I had a kind of a descending level, and I'm going to ask Eleanor to come up and write on the board there next to discipline these things. So we had the first thing, number one, and this would be they dislike. Number one, it's three things. First is what they dislike to do. They dislike. So it's still the same process. Instruct, discipline, instruct, restore. And the things we choose for our non-rod discipline are going to be proactive things that are good for them. So one is what they dislike. An example of this. An example of this would be our oldest daughter. Now, if we told her that she, let's say she talked back to her mother, and we told her, okay, you are going to have to stay inside and help mom around the house today. Well, that's not her first choice of doing things, But she wouldn't hate that. She would get to bake some things and do a little house cleaning and help mom in the kitchen. That wouldn't be bad. It wouldn't be her first choice, but she'd not hate that. However, on the other hand, if we told her, you're going to have to work in the garden today. Now, is it good for a woman to know how to work in the garden? That is. That's a good skill, isn't it? But she will get out there and be digging in the garden and weeding, and there are going to be some bugs, and she's going to be hot, and she's going to get sweaty, and it's dirty, and maybe she finds a turtle, and there'll be worms, and she'll be pulling things up, and her girlfriends are all going to come over, and they're all going to go over to one of their houses and have some tea and talk, and they come by and see her, and they're going, this is horrible, and they go, well, yeah, talk back to my mom. I have to work in the garden today. I don't know when I'll be free. And they say, okay, bye. And then they all laugh and they go away. And there she is. And then after she's through, we would talk to her again. We would instruct her. Now, this is why you ended up doing this. You have to be respectful to your mother. You can't raise your voice to her. You can't stamp your feet. You can't slam door. You know, whatever it was. And then we would restore her. And then she would get to go away. Now, if Sam was disrespectful, our son was disrespectful to her mother, and we told him to do that, well, that wouldn't be so bad, would it? I mean, he gets to dig around the garden, he finds worms, he'll get a little can, he'll start putting the worms in the can. Then he'll find a turtle, he'll put that in a bucket. Kill some neat bugs, maybe find some other bugs to go fishing with, and he's digging around in there, and he's getting sweaty, and you know, he's out in the sun, he kind of likes that, and he's digging, his friends come over, they're going to play football, and oh man, what happened? Well, I was disrespectful to my parents, I've got to work, I can't do it, but let me show you something. Tonight, we can all go fishing, look what I'm collecting. Ooh, wow, that's great. And what's in the bucket? Oh, I found this turtle. You know, we can scare the girls with that. Wow, that's great. Okay, Sam, see you around. That'll be great. We'll bring our fishing poles and be by this evening. So, I mean, he wouldn't want to do that, but he wouldn't hate it, would he? So with Sam, though, how about spending the day cleaning the kitchen and helping his mom? Now, is it good for a young man to learn how to do that? He's going to live on his own. He needs to know how to cook. He needs to know how to clean the kitchen. He needs to know some domestic chores, doesn't he? And his friends come over and they've got the football. They want him to go play football. And there he is cleaning the oven and chopping carrots. And oh, man. That wasn't a lot of fun having his friends see him do that, was it? So what you want to do is choose things that they dislike. And Eleanor and I know those things, and we have a list of things that need to be done. Now, the second thing are things you dislike. How many of you ladies like cleaning toilets? You like cleaning toilets, okay? Sir, you married a saint. I hope you get down on your knees every night and thank God. All right. Most women don't like cleaning toilets, and so that's one thing that would go on this list. I don't like washing and waxing the car. That would go on the list. So anything that you don't like to do will go on the list. And so we will match these things up and get these chores done. But see, that's proactive, because they need to learn how to do these things anyways, don't they? Now, what won't be on this list is cleaning their bathroom. Why won't that be on the list? Because that's part of their responsibilities. What won't be on the list is cleaning their room, because that's part of their responsibilities. So they've already got responsibilities and chores they're doing. So we're going beyond this, aren't we? We're going beyond this. And the third thing that goes up here is privileges. I remember telling Eleanor, you know, technically the car is my responsibility. The kids don't drive and I need to keep it clean. I really wish Sam would lose his temper or not do his homework or something so I wouldn't have to clean the car. Unfortunately, by that time we have really well-behaved children. Now, it's all right when you have responsibilities to get your children to help you so that they can learn to work hard. But you do not become lazy parents because you have teenagers and house help. You need to model hard working for them. Hard work, don't you? So they should grow up like on the yard day. You get more done because your children are helping you. Now you don't have to do anything. If you have house help, ladies, you get more done because they help you work. They don't do your children's work, and they don't free you from doing any work. I hope we covered that. So that's very important. Now, I've observed that there are three sins of house help in this transcends culture. The three sins of house help are, number one, it comes from James 5. It says, the pay of the workman, which you have withheld, is crying out to the Lord of harvest. The first sin of house help is not paying them their full, honest wage every week in order to keep them from leaving you because you hold back. That's sin. Who's the best employer that any woman should work for? A Christian. And of those Christians, who's the best employer? A pastor's wife or a navigator staff wife? That should be a great blessing. Sin number two. Taking advantage of their lowly status. We had house help. Rather than taking advantage of her status, we helped our house help advance. Eleanor helped her with her citizenship course so she could get her green card. So she could... I would talk with her, with Eleanor and I would talk to her. We were both educators. She didn't know the American education system. So we talked with her about how her children could do well in school and how she could help them do well in school. We told her that she could bring her son with her in the summer so she could keep an eye on him. When he came over, I talked with her about her son's appearance. How in America, how a young boy who's taken seriously by the teachers should look and behave. And she would have him sit and read, and we made the books in our children's library open to him so he could advance. And he went from being a problem student in school to an honor student in school. And we helped her understand the economic system in America. She's not our house help anymore because she has her own house help cleaning company. That's what it's like to work for a Christian. On her birthdays, we gave her extra. At Christmas, we gave her extra so her children could have a good Christmas. At Easter, we gave her Easter baskets for all her children. On the anniversary of working for us, we gave her extra. The children called her by her first name, not by her last name, Mrs. Johnson, or whatever her name was. That's the third sin of house help, is the humiliation of house help. Allowing your children to call an adult woman by her first name simply because she works for you. That's sin. Allowing your children to give her orders. That's sin. Allowing children to take advantage of her, rebuke her, have her live in fear of her, of your children. That's sin. You treating her less than an equal. She's an employee, not a slave. Can we agree on that? How many of you are employees? Huh? Your boss comes in the morning and says to you, get tea. Are you happy? No, you don't treat employees like that. And your boss's child comes into you and says, I want cookie. Give me cookie. Are you happy? Are you employed? Your boss's child comes into you and says, iron my clothes. Get my clean shirt for me. Yeah. And call you by your first name. Are you happy? Yeah. Well, then don't allow your children to treat your employee that way. Okay? Don't do it, it's sin. So, what we do is privileges are removed. So it's what they dislike, what you dislike. They already have choice because the house help isn't working for them. They don't work for them. House help works only for man. And so then the third thing is a privilege. Is a privilege. Now, some children don't have privileges. Everything's a right. They have their own room. They have their own cell phone. They go in. They want something out of the refrigerator. They just open it up. They turn on the TV. They go outside. They leave the door open. They don't care. They get on their bicycle. They take cookies out of the cookie jar. They want some paper. They just go in their dad's office and take the paper. You see, it's their home and you're living in their home. Why should they be thankful? They don't have any privileges. So it's important for children to understand that everything they have in that home is a privilege. It's not a right. And privileges can be taken care of. Our children were arguing a lot about TV. What did I say we did? I just boxed it up and put it away. You say, well, that causes me. That punishes me. Well, then, you just say no TV for the children, and you just move the TV into your room, or to your office. But it didn't hurt me not to watch TV anyways. In fact, one of the things that I find most enjoyable about mission trips is there's no TV. Because all my friends have TVs and stuff like that. It's kind of nice to be free from that thing. I had a pastor friend whose daughter put a notice on her door, keep out of her room, and would go in there and slam the door and yell, keep out. So she came home from school one day and the door was gone. He took it off the hinges and put it in the garage. And told her that when she could behave properly, she could have the door back. You can do that, can't you? You can do that. You can take anything out of that child's room you want, and you can box it up and tell them that they can have it back when they earn it. When they earn it. So we've talked about this over and over again. Why should your children be thankful when they don't have to ask for anything? They can just take. When they don't have to say please. When they don't have to say thank you. Why should they? We would always take one of these two and TV. Sometimes it would be other things as well. The TV always went. No TV. No. We did not take away church activities. We didn't take away Christian music. Didn't take away things that were good for them. But we took away privileges. You didn't take away the privilege. That is very important. And then, there are boundaries. All children need boundaries. In fact, there are five necessary ingredients that you must supply your children for them to get into trouble. And we're going to talk about that next session. Parents who do not have boundaries invite their children to have problems. So, they need these boundaries. Now, I mentioned several times TV. I'm going to close. We have about 3 minutes left. I'm going to close with a little survey here. I want you to think of your grandfather. Can you you know who your grandfather was? Most people do. Or somebody your grandfather's age. I want you to think of them in South Africa. Your grandfather. Does anyone have a clear memory of their grandfather, who their grandfather is? You, sir? Okay, so you can picture that person. Or your grandfather's age. if you're my age, your grandfather lived around the early to middle 1900s. Y'all's age, he might have lived in might be my age, lived in the born in 1950, but in the early 1900s. Okay? Now, how many women besides his wife in their underwear did your grandfather see? How many? Yeah. No women. Of course, his daughters when they were getting dressed, but they're not women. I'm talking about adult women who've entered puberty. No. Okay. How many women, how many couples did your grandfather see where he was right up close looking at them while they passionately kiss? How many? Okay. Let me ask you this. How many couples who were in bed together, not nude, but just in bed together with the sheets up, kissing and things like that, how many did he see? How many did he see? Okay. If you leave the television on, unsupervised, your son, in one afternoon, will see more of those things than your grandfather saw in his lifetime. That cannot be good. Can't. How many men did your grandfather see shot dead in the street? How many did he men did he see dismembered or hacked to death? If you leave the TV on, unrestricted, your daughter will see more of those things on a Saturday evening than your grandfather saw in a lifetime. That can't be good either, can it? That can't be good. You know that's true, don't you? You know that boy you're afraid your daughter will bring home? He smokes, he drinks, he has a foul mouth. He's a rebel. He stands against everything you believe in and hope for. And he's rough and abusive and promiscuous. You know that man you hope never walks through your front door? If you allow your TV to run in the evening, unrestricted, you invite him in for your daughter's entertainment each evening, don't you? You know that woman you're afraid your son will meet? She dresses lewdly. She's loose. She has a foul mouth. She drinks and smokes. If you allow your children just to watch TV, you invite her into your son's room, into your very living room, knowingly, every evening, don't you? Just on the commercials, don't you? Just the commercials. Why do you do that? I didn't do it. Eleanor didn't do it. We didn't do that. Allow our children. We didn't allow those people into our home. Why are you allowing them into your home? That can't be good. There was a man in the public television industry named Art Linkletter, and he was arguing vehemently that all of the violence and sex was corrupting America's youth. And people were laughing at him. And I've got this quote in my workbook, but he was speaking to a media congress. And he said, let me get this straight. You don't think a one-hour TV show that entails violence or a one-hour TV show that will entail sex will affect behavior? Nah, no, it won't. But you will sell at the World Cup finals a 20-second slot for several million dollars because people think you will buy a car or a computer. So we know it does affect behavior, doesn't we? Otherwise, the first person who bought commercial time and then saw his sales go unchanged, they wouldn't buy any more commercial time, would they? We know it affects them. I was in a pastor's home, and he wasn't there. He would be there in a little while. His house help was ironing and watching TV. His three elementary school age daughters were sitting on the couch watching it. It was one of these rock videos where these four women dressed in a way which I couldn't even look at it, gyrating in a way where I couldn't look at it, saying words that I would never want to hear, and the girls were just staring at it. That cannot be good. But you know why that was happening? Because the mother was too busy with her ministry to take care of her own children. That's not good, is it? We don't leave it up to the house help to make the moral decisions of our children, do we? So I asked her to turn it off. Why do I have to do their mother's job? I didn't insult the house help. I wouldn't expect her to make those moral decisions. It's not her job. She's just an employee. You don't know what's taking place in your home, do you? You need to be there and be protecting your daughters. So that TV has to be controlled. You have to be on top of that. It can be a great tool for education or family entertainment, but it can also be a tool of destruction for your children. That is your responsibility, and not thinking about it will not change anything. May God bless the teaching of His holy word. In Christ's name I pray, amen.